Hi, this is Alana from Sauk Hill. I'm the host of There There on WGXC Acra, Hudson, and Catskill. Radio for open ears.
If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Waveform's WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions. But we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Waveform's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Timothy Simmons of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, May 19th. Go to the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org, for more information about any of these stories. Roger Hannigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Greene County Legislature, through Chairperson Patrick Linger, voted May 17th to declare a state of emergency because at some time in the future someone might send a busload of migrants to the county. So Greene County voted to fine any hotel that accepts a migrant. The state of emergency did not mention the Southern Republican governors who might bus migrants their way, but did target the mayor of New York City, a Democrat. County legislators blamed, quote, New York City's program to rapidly increase the number of migrants in the county to unsustainable levels, unquote, even though no plan to bus migrants to Greene County has been reported or unveiled. Nevertheless, Greene County is now fining up to $2,000 per migrant per day against a hotel that violates the law, which is in effect for 5 days but can be extended. On May 17th, Greene County Sheriff's deputies delivered copies of the emergency order to hotels and motels. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that the state's Department of Labor reported on May 18th that the unemployment rate declined from March to April from 4.1% to 4%, with the number of unemployed people falling from 391,600 in March to 385,000 in April. The private sector lost 25,000 jobs in April, but the public sector did better. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media that engineers predict that the Hudson-Athens Lighthouse will collapse and sink into the Hudson River within 5 years unless work begins soon to repair the foundation. So far, the biggest names in politics from both parties say they are working on securing the $7.5 million in federal funding needed to repair, restore, and protect the damaged underwater foundation in the Hudson River between Athens and Hudson. Senator Charles Schumer, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Representative Mark Molinaro, State Senator Michelle Hinchey, and State Assemblypersons Dee Dee Barrett and Chris Teague are all on board. The Hudson-Athens Lighthouse Preservation Society President Kristen Gamble said that they are distributing petitions in area shops urging the legislators to get the funding. The Hudson-Athens Lighthouse Preservation Society said in a statement, quote, the lighthouse is held up by 200 underwater wooden pilings pounded 50 feet into the riverbed and protected by packing mud and large boulders or riprap. The foundation was an 1874 engineering marvel. A 2021 underwater survey using LIDAR technology revealed the alarming and accelerated foundation damage. River currents, tides, and weather have taken their toll, unquote. So far, the society has raised more than $200,000 in donations and grants to restore the foundation. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Jamil Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Chatham's Park and Recreation Committee is proposing a special use permit policy regulating alcohol sales at events on town-owned properties. Drinking, smoking, and drug use are typically prohibited in the park. Currently, though, there is a policy for alcohol sales at the park, with an application due 45 days before the event going to the town board. Applicants need to get liability insurance, naming the town as additionally insured, and list the name of a vendor with a New York State liquor license and the required permit for the sales. Then they must leave a $1,000 security deposit and pay a $250 fee and provide a map of the designated area where alcohol would be served. The committee wants the town to be able to discriminate between types of applications. The committee wrote to the town that they believe, quote, consideration should be given to the makeup of the attendance at the event, unquote, as they are concerned about youth who use the park being exposed to alcohol sales. Chatham Town Recreation Director Michael West said that excessive alcohol use isn't a problem at the park currently. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, May 19th. Local early morning temperatures range from 32 degrees in Medusa, sitting in a motionless pocket of air, to 48 degrees not so far away in Scaticoke. Regional average soil temperature is 52 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Tomorrow, allergy sufferers should get a break as the moisture brings pollen levels down to low territory. It gets back up to medium on Sunday. Focusing back on today, it is going to be cool. Hard winds around 15 miles per hour today keep us from feeling comfortable despite the high of 71 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 52 degrees. Tomorrow, just after sunup, light rain chances arrive. They get stronger and cover more area by 1 p.m. By 4 p.m., we see a high temperature of only 65 degrees. Near dark, some lightning may be seen. Things calm gradually overnight with a low of 50 degrees. Sunday, a teeny bit of lingering rain stops by 8 a.m. Winds pick up, clouds vacate, and we get a comfortable sunny afternoon with a high of 74. Monday, still dry, high of 71. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:20 a.m., low at 10:10 a.m., high again at 3:48 p.m., and low again at 10:08 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 62 degrees. And the tide strength will be high. Sandbar visual observations are being made. When it's warm enough for the maker's crew to get out there, we'll make some direct measurements of it. So far, looks like the top surface has been fluctuating up to 10 inches a day. Vegetation will start to lock that in soon. Sunset today will be at 7:57 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:27 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be slow at 330 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. A coronal mass ejection is expected to arrive on Saturday, but I'd be on the watch for sudden geomagnetic activity starting now. Active sunspots have been ionizing atmosphere regularly, so expect radio interference today. X-class flare chances are at 5%. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 121. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
KZMB, all zombie radio.
Society, God save the little duck, Bonneville and Variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society. God save Strawberry Jam and all the different.
Christian society. God save Mrs. Moss and good old Mother Riley. We are the custard pie appreciation consortium. God save the George Cross and all those who were loving him. Affinity. God save the little shops, China cups and virginity. We are the skyscraper condemnation affiliates. God save the Tudor houses, anti-table dominions. Preserving the old ways, forbidding abuse. Protecting the new ways, for me and for you. What more can we do?
Once a happy town where harmony and love was busting out at all the seams and in the trees above. The doves of peace were laying eggs. There were no signs of strife, for each man loved his neighbor and sometimes his neighbor's wife. But a sudden change soon come about. Storm clouds were in the sky. Nobody stopped to kiss a body coming through the rye. For each man eyed his neighbor with malice and with hate. Housewives no longer spilled the beans across the garden gate. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. It was sewer pipes versus slop pails. The town was split in two. With profane propaganda, the air was often blue. The sewer and water faction ran a sanitary plank. They said shallow wells and slop pails and toilets always stank. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But those slop pailers were stubborn. They fought with tooth and nail. They said our nitwit council should be languishing in jail. They told how high taxation and plumbers' union fees would throw us in the poorhouse and they'd throw away the keys. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But when the vote was counted, the slop pailers met defeat. And then they started tearing up our quiet village street. Now peace and harmony once more replaced the grapes of wrath. So when next you visit East End, just stop in and have a bath. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slot fails do.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have another U.S. Supreme Court case to put on your radar, one which could further erode protections against racial gerrymandering by anti-voter state legislatures. Expect to see Alexander versus South Carolina Conference of the NAACP on next year's docket. A three-judge federal panel found in 2021 that a congressional voting district was gerrymandered to favor Republicans, partisan gerrymandering, which the U.S. Supreme Court said in a 2019 decision it would leave to the state courts. Vox reports that to accomplish this partisan gerrymander, it moved 79% of black voters in South Carolina's first congressional district into a nearby district, making the first district a safe Republican district. The federal panel ruled that the move violated the Equal Protections Clause of the 14th Amendment. Because the current high court has not been friendly to fair redistricting or upholding the 1965 Voting Rights Act, democracy advocates are concerned that the South Carolina case could further erode laws designed to provide equal representation of black Americans and other minority groups. If the court finds that the primary motivation was partisan gerrymandering, not racial gerrymandering, it creates a loophole that anti-democracy legislatures could exploit and get away with. Expect this case to be on the SCOTUS docket in next year's term. We have links to articles and the Federal Circuit Court panel's decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Partisan legislation just won't produce the result we need. I am hopeful that soon both sides will find an agreement that keeps default completely off the table.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer expressed some optimism Thursday about reaching a bipartisan agreement on the national debt limit and avoiding default. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy also expressed hope congressional leaders could reach a deal in time to hold a House vote as early as next week. Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden Thursday over his handling of the nation's border security.
Joe Biden has deliberately compromised our national security by refusing to enforce immigration laws and secure our border.
House Republicans don't currently have the votes to impeach Biden. Earlier this year, several Republicans announced articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, but there has been no movement. Michael Barr, vice chair of the Federal Reserve, said his review of Silicon Valley Bank's failure found the bank's management practices and inadequate regulatory supervision by the Fed to be at fault for the collapse. Barr says he plans to improve the speed, force, and agility of supervision.
Supervision should intensify at the right pace as a bank grows in size or complexity. Once identified, issues should be addressed more quickly, both by the bank and by supervisors.
Earlier this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed several bills which target drag shows, restrict the use of personal pronouns in school, force the use of certain restrooms, and ban gender-affirming care for minors.
You have a movement amongst, I would say, rogue elements of the medical establishment to do things that is basically the mutilation of minors.
Meanwhile, the Walt Disney Company has canceled plans to build a $1 billion office complex in Orlando and bring thousands of jobs to the state over changing business conditions, a week after Disney CEO Bob Iger spared with DeSantis about the company's investment in Florida. Last year, DeSantis signed a bill taking away the company's right to self-govern its 40-square-mile property after former Disney CEO Bob Chapek criticized a state law banning conversations of sexual orientation and gender identity in schools. The Supreme Court sided with tech giants Thursday, protecting online platforms from two liability lawsuits over terrorist-related content on their sites. In oral arguments, Justice Elena Kagan said supporters of more stringent tech standards could end up opening the door for a world of lawsuits.
Anytime you have content, you also have these presentational and prioritization choices that can be subject to suit.
Finally, a new analysis from the Democratic data firm Catalyst examined how Democrats avoided an electoral wipeout in the 2022 midterms. According to the data, the party focused on cultivating voters under 30, winning 65% of them, up from 62% in 2020. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveform's WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m. Next, we have 2023 new music from Oval. That's Marcus Pop, the name of his band. He's been around since the 90s. The new album is called Romantique with a Q at the end. And this track is called Rit Me? Let's call the whole thing off.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that whistle man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
That was that cat, all right.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, Hudson Mohawk Magazine listeners. This is Garrett McCary. I'm presently on the fourth floor of the Capitol Building, which I've never been in. Quite a wonderful place if you've ever been here. And we're here because a Senator Parker is going to be talking about community media bill, which he is proposing. So we're going to find out what that's all about. There are representatives here from BronxNet TV and from Queen Public Television. And, of course, there's no representatives from Troy Public Access because we don't have any. This may change. I'm here with Tony Riddle. Tony has been involved in public access, community media, 40, 50 years? We don't know.
I was a community producer in 1980, so it's been since then. That is like 40 years.
It's like 43 years, Tony. Where are you working at it now?
I work at BRIC. I'm the Senior Vice President for Community Media at BRIC. BRIC is a full arts center in downtown Brooklyn. So we have not only public access community media facilities, but we also do concerts in the park. We have contemporary arts exhibits. So it's really an opportunity for community media to also explore the aesthetic side of what we do. So it's not all just talk, it's not all just social and politics, which is extremely important, but also the aesthetics of how you put stories together and how you have an effect on communities through your storytelling.
So why are you here in Albany today?
Okay, so the way that we've been funded is that in order to operate a cable television facility, a cable operator has to pay to run their fibers or wires either through the public ground or on poles that go over the ground. In New York City, it's mostly underground. And so, in a way, if you think about it, it's like if somebody wanted to set up a lemonade stand in Prospect Park, then they would have to pay for a franchise with the city in order to have the right to make that money. The city would get a portion of that. So if you think about cable, they're making about $2 billion a year in New York City. And the way that they operate is by operating on publicly owned land. And so they pay a percentage of what they make in order to both support community media and into the city general fund. But now, a lot of subscribers have moved from standard cable to paying for streaming services, but we don't receive any funding from that. The city also doesn't receive funding for that. Funding that goes for whether it's the police or networking between city facilities or asphalt, whatever the city wants. In order to make up for that loss of funding, since the streaming is actually still going through the same wire and it's still going through the same public ground, we are proposing a tax statewide on streaming services so that money can again go to support community media or the general fund for the cities that they're collecting for.
That's the question that I had for you. In Troy, New York, where the Sanctuary for Independent Media is, who I'm representing here, they collect the franchise fee and they put it in the general fund. Is there anything in this new proposed legislation that would require municipalities to put it to community media?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question. It's almost like you read the bill. We were thinking particularly of Troy, where we know that you have a very robust community media center that's not operating through the city. It's not operating with city funds directly. So in the case of, say, Brooklyn, where there is like a public access, educational access, and government access facilities, a certain amount of the money, about 2%, there's 5% is what's being asked for total, but about 2% of that would go to the Community Media Center in Brooklyn. In the case of Troy, if there's not a formal community media center like that, these funds would go into a fund that would be administered, we think, maybe by NISCA or something like that, and it would be available in grant form to community media centers that operate independently, like the one in Troy.
So this is a part of the bill. If the franchise money is not used for media, it would go to the NISCA.
Well, that's what we proposed. We're not sure how the state will do it, but what we did propose was that for municipalities, a lot of smaller ones in particular, that don't have a public education or government access center, they would be eligible to apply through NISCA or some other state agency to have support for whatever they thought was important in terms of community media. So it could be an independent art center, it could be a media center like the one in Troy, it could be, you know, who knows, it could be arts education, you know, media education in the schools. It would depend on the local municipality, but that money would be earmarked for something related to community media.
So I can't wait till the folks in Troy look at this legislation and say, oh, you're taking my general fund money for media?
No, well, actually, it's not that at all. It's just the opposite. If this passes, the majority of the money still goes into the general fund. It's just if you want to be eligible for the community media part of it, you would not be able to put that in the general fund. So that's an additional part.
I'm still a little confused.
So picture $1. Let's say you collected $1. 20 cents of that would go directly to the state for the administration of the program, because, of course, they have to figure out what all the taxes are and so forth. 40 cents of that would go to the municipality where the taxes were paid. And 40% of that would go to community media funding. If you were in a city that didn't have a formal public education or government center, then you could apply for a grant out of the pooled 40% statewide, and that would be earmarked strictly for community media funding. Although, you know, I have been talking with some of the really rural representatives who, you know, frankly, having a community media center might not be their main interest, and their interest might be in making sure that there's cell tower coverage, for instance, or that there's broadband going to everybody's home. You know, it's a lot more basic there. And we think that that's still an equity issue. You know, there's, you know, just like the community voice and community media is an equity issue, you know, that people need to have a voice in determining the conversation around their own communities. And that's why community media is important. In some smaller rural places where there's only, say, 6 homes per mile, a community media center might not be as important as making sure that everybody has access to either broadband or even cell tower coverage. I was talking with one representative earlier today about the tragic situation where there was a young lady in a car with several other people. You may have heard of it. And they drove into the wrong driveway and tried to back out, and the woman got shot. They had to drive 6 miles before they had cell phone coverage where they could get an ambulance, and she died. So this is a life and death issue in some places, and so we think it may be important to provide that option in those kinds of areas in particular. We might try and figure out some language that will work for really rural areas. But as I said, the, you know, 40% of that dollar, 40 cents out of that dollar, would either go to the PEG center in your community, and lacking that, the community could apply to a fund for that would have guidelines that really indicated the money had to go to some form of community communication.
So how can I, as a citizen, promote this bill?
Find out who your legislator is and see if they're signed on to Senate Bill 2581 or Assembly Bill 5900. We have, it looked like, when I was reading it, it looked like about 10 assembly people and 6 or 7 senators so far. I expect that to probably double in the next week or two because it's starting to gain momentum.
Well, I thank you, Tony, for providing me with that information.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is really good.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXE Newsroom, this is the WGXE News Update. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that Melissa Barrow is no longer superintendent of the Catskill Schools, but it is unclear when she left and why she left. At the May 17th Catskills School meeting, the Board of Education approved a, and I quote, settlement and separation agreement, end quote, with Barrow, who, and I quote, resigned, end quote, from the position for, and I quote, personal reasons, end quote, according to a statement from the district that did not elaborate on the timing or the reason. The board appointed Dr. Dan Wilson, Catskills Assistant Superintendent for Pupil Personnel, as Interim Superintendent for Schools for the remainder of the school year. Barrow only spent a few months on the job, as she was appointed on January 11th at an annual salary of $171,000, effective February 12, 2023. The terms of the, and I quote, settlement and separation agreement, end quote, were not made public. Wilson was previously interim superintendent from January 1st to February 12th this year. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that State Senator Michelle Hinchey announced on May 15th that schools in Catskill, Chatham, Hudson, and Kinderhook will add full-day pre-kindergarten in the 2023-24 school year. Catskill Central Schools will receive $466,349 in universal pre-K funding for 20 new pre-K seats. Chatham gets $226,800 for 22 new pre-K seats. Hudson receives $538,441 for 20 new pre-K seats. And Kinderhook gets $541,192 for 41 new pre-K seats. And she said, and I quote, "This is a huge win for our students, teachers, and taxpayers. It means more money for Hudson Valley classrooms, which helps our kids build the foundational skills they need to succeed throughout their lives while helping districts keep a lid on local school property taxes. Every student in New York deserves a good public education like the one I had in the Ulster County public school system, and I always stand with parents and teachers in championing transformative investments in our public schools," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Kate Lisa reports for New York State of Politics that Anthony J. Annucci, the acting New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision Commissioner, will retire effective August 11th after 38 years with the department. He said, and I quote, "It has been an honor and a privilege to oversee the department for the last 10 years. Every day throughout my 38-plus years in the agency, I have learned something new and have developed nothing but the utmost respect and appreciation for this department and its incredible workforce," end quote. DOCES Executive Deputy Commissioner Daniel F. Monticello III will take over operational oversight of the agency after Annucci leaves. Governor Kathy Hochul will nominate Annucci's successor, with state senators voting to reject or appoint her a nominee. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Emily Jacobs writes in the Washington Examiner that Allison Esposito, a Republican who ran for lieutenant governor last year, might mount an election campaign for the 18th congressional district seat now held by Democrat Pat Ryan. Esposito was Lee Zeldin's running mate in 2024, but failed to unseat Governor Kathy Hochul or Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado. Ryan beat Assemblyperson Colin Schmidt by a single percentage in 2022 in the 18th Congressional District. A Republican source told the newspaper that, and I quote, "Allison Esposito is exploring the different ways she can serve New Yorkers. Running for Congress, among other offices, is definitely on that list," end quote. Read the full story in the Washington Examiner. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Job numbers are climbing post-pandemic, although not as much in rural America. Now, new legislation in the Senate may help. The pandemic caused 22 million jobs to disappear from the U.S. economy. And Daily Yonder editor Tim Merrima says those outside urban corridors are still feeling it.
Rural America lost nearly a million jobs in 2020, and as of last year, we've only made up about three-quarters of that amount.
6 out of 10 rural counties had fewer jobs last year than in 2019. Merrima says those are troubling numbers for folks outside the cities.
Metropolitan counties have more jobs now than they did before the pandemic.
The bipartisan Rural Jobs Act, now before the Senate, would expand the new market tax credit to disadvantaged rural communities. The credit has spurred the creation of over a million jobs the past dozen years, but only 1 in 4 have been in rural communities. Colorado farmers will be able to fix their own farm equipment starting next year under a new right to repair law. As ag equipment becomes more computerized, Chad Frankie with the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union says manufacturers have cited so-called trade secrets as to why only their technicians could fix broken farm machinery.
And I think Colorado finally getting this passed through has really opened a lot of eyes that it hasn't been happening, and it's something that people should be able to do once they buy that equipment.
The law requires manufacturers to provide farmers with manuals, tools, parts, and even software. By one estimate, waiting days or weeks for repairs costs U.S. farmers around $3 billion, $43 million in Colorado alone. Joe Van Wy is with the group Farm Action.
We're going to return a lot of money to the farmer's pocket, hopefully help these folks stay on their land and keep feeding their neighbors.
Colorado's right to repair law is being eyed by at least 10 other states and at the federal level. Classrooms in rural community colleges are filling up again after students took a pandemic hiatus. Our Edwin J. Vieira reports that Virginia's Southside Community College believes its Aspire 2027 program is making a difference.
A report from Columbia University finds national enrollments in community colleges increased by almost 17,000 students during the fall 2022 semester, the first time enrollment grew since the start of the pandemic. Dr. Quentin Johnson, president of Southside Virginia Community College, describes one of the plan's goals.
Now, we want to promote student prosperity by advancing student completion and post-graduation success. We want to increase student enrollment, particularly for underrepresented and underserved populations.
Public four-year colleges were the only institutions reporting a decline in spring enrollment. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Wavefarms WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions, but we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXE will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
We thought we would take a listen to what's going on in the community on the WGXE community calendar online at WGXE.org, where you can add your own event and hear it read on the radio and seen around the world at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Just click on Add an Event and add away. Fill in the blanks and you'll hear it soon. Saturday, May 20th, the Christ Church Episcopal Parish Hall in Hudson has a spring affair from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. with a sale of baked goods, homemade soups, jewelry, toys, plants, knickknacks, and more. Also Saturday, May 20th, Oakdale Rewilding is going on, a volunteer day at Oakdale Park in Hudson to plant native trees along the Oakdale Trail. That's from 10 a.m. to 12:30. There's also a spring wildflower walk Saturday, May 20th at the Eldridge Research Center in Rensselaerville at 10 a.m. Clyverack resident Eric Frazier is a renowned bansuri player, kind of wooden flute. He's performing with some friends at 3 p.m. Saturday, May 20th at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. That's 369 Warren Street, just above the WGXC Hudson studio. There's also a classical ensemble led by Ghent resident Gilly Melamed-Lev, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tideman Farm in Germantown, Saturday, May 20th. The traditional Irish music session is at the Shamrock House, Sunday, May 21st from 2 to 5 p.m. It's an open Irish jam every Sunday there. And 26-year-old Catskill resident Rachel Wagman is singing with Michael Clement from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Temple Israel of Catskill, Sunday, May 21st. Patricia Guerrero is performing 4 p.m. Sunday, May 21st at PS21 in Chatham. And at 7 p.m. Sunday, May 21st, The End Is Not What I Thought It Would Be is showing. It's the upstate premiere of Andrea Klein's film, plus a post-screening question and answer with Andrea Klein from Columbia County. She's a filmmaker, composer, and more. All these events and many, many more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. Go there to find out your own and add your own event if you didn't hear it here.
Bury the key
Brooklyn's Chris Lee on the radio at WGXC with Bury the Kings.